The Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, for $20 off your first purchase. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code MEDIA at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200.
For probably millions of people, it's my voice that they remember. I mean, I literally can tell you, I've been at a deli and was ordering sandwich meat, and someone started looking at me like, where have I heard that before? If Odell Beckham fumbles on the next play and loses me 2 fantasy points, I'm going to call that with enthusiasm too, because guess what? Some defense just made him fumble, and somebody in my audience is fired up about the way that defense performed. I have my earpiece in my left ear for Red Zone. And the reason I tell you that is any other broadcast that I do, I try and put the earpiece in the right ear. Why? Because I really do believe that I will lose hearing in my left ear from the accumulation of the constant noise and the constant stimulus for 7 straight hours.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media about their process and about their career. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer's Bette Marston. And this week our guest is the NFL Network and Red Zone channel host, Scott Hansen. For those who regularly watch the NFL Network, Scott can also be seen on NFL Total Access, but you know him from his work on the Red Zone channel, incredibly addictive. It's an amazing channel to watch on Sunday, and I would call it just vital if you have a fantasy football team. It shows all the touchdowns, all the scoring, basically takes you when one of the teams is in the quote-unquote red zone, and Scott Hansen does an amazing job of working on that show as it whips around every NFL game on Sunday afternoons. Prior to the NFL Network, Scott was at Comcast Sportsnet in Philly. He worked locally in Tampa, in Springfield, in Traverse City, Michigan. We'll get into some of that. We're looking forward to getting him on. I believe he'll be from Los Angeles. Thank you so much for the great feedback on the previous podcast. People really seem to like Jalen Rose, which I had a lot of fun doing that interview. He was really interesting. Jim Miller on Grantland, Katie Nolan, Mike Hill. There's been some, and you know, just going back, obviously, to Rachel Nichols and Adam Schefter, Bob Lee, Bomani Jones. We've had some very, very good guests, and we look forward to some guests coming up as well. I believe Jay Billis will be coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're just about to book that. All right, no long introductions here. Let us get to Scott Hansen from beautiful Los Angeles, probably somewhere sitting in the sunshine, drinking a pina colada or something. I don't know what they do in L.A. It's very cold here in New York. Scott, we appreciate you being on the Sports Illustrated podcast. Thank you very much.
Richard, great to be with you. Great to be talking some sports television. You're one of the best. I appreciate it.
You got it. Sports Illustrated. I'm one of the best yet. I just mispronounced the podcast, but it's the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, not the Sports Illustrated podcast. But we leave that in, Scott. It's like the Red Zone channel.
Come on, wait a minute. I don't work with a teleprompter. Do you have a teleprompter there?
I read the Grantland piece. I know you don't work with a teleprompter. I was impressed. All right, first off, Scott, how do you prepare for, you know, one of the things that people like on the show, sort of talking about process and how people prepare for their job. So as specific as you can, and I'll sit back and just let you roll, how do you prepare for each Sunday?
Yeah, so not to glorify what I do beyond what it is, but I liken my role to that of the professional athletes, which I cover. These guys work hours and hours and hours, Monday through Saturday, so that they can peak on NFL game day Sunday. And I basically do the same thing. There are so many hours that I have to prepare to try and be as good as I can be and our staff be as good as we can be on NFL Sunday. And you can prepare and have a great week of preparation, and if you don't go and execute it on Sunday, it doesn't mean anything, just like NFL football players. So to give you kind of a blow-by-blow, after the show on Sunday, I'll just basically collapse after 7 hours with no commercials, going through every touchdown from every game. Monday, I'll kind of read recaps of everything that's going on, watch a lot of highlight shows, making sure that our audience didn't miss anything live that other broadcast entities have been able to develop or demonstrate to them, show to them. So then I kind of figure, okay, how can we get a little bit better? On Tuesday, the research staff at NFL Media emails out a research packet, usually 200 to 300 pages for the upcoming week. And they've plowed through every trend, every statistical anomaly that they can find, any little oddity that might add to someone's consumption of the NFL. I start going through that, and we'll be reading it, paring it down, looking for little things that I think I might be able to use or interject on Tuesday night, Wednesday, Thursday, really all the way up to kickoff. On Wednesday, that's open locker room day for the teams that are playing on Sundays. So then I start hearing different quotes, different statements that coaches and players have been talking about to try and develop maybe storylines that we could be talking about on NFL Red Zone. And Thursday, Friday, injury reports, polishing up what I've known before. Saturday, kind of go over everything once again. Sunday, 5 a.m. wake-up call and get into the studio and try and execute it.
Scott, when you are on Red Zone, who do you envision as your audience, as specific as you can be?
As specific, the answer I would give you is more of a general one. It's football fans. It's passionate football fans who maybe the more specific side of that is, because so many other people in the country are passionate football fans. Passionate football fans, and I kind of envision the people watching are people whose main NFL team, if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan and they're playing at 1 o'clock Eastern, chances are you're watching your Pittsburgh Steelers. And we don't ever want to infringe upon someone enjoying their favorite NFL team and watching every snap from that individual game. But if the Pittsburgh Steelers are your favorite team, I can almost guarantee you your second favorite team is your fantasy football team.
Right.
Or your daily fantasy team, DraftKings being our title sponsor. A lot of people play that. And so, therefore, you can't watch one game to see, quote-unquote, your team play or your opponent's fantasy team, what they're doing or not doing. You have to watch every game, and we provide that service to people. So I think it's people whose team might not be playing at that time, although I have been told by people, fans, either in person or on Twitter, that they say that we do such a good job that if their team has a losing record, their favorite team has a losing record in the middle of the regular season, they'd rather watch us. Because fans, whether or not it's fantasy involved or, let's say, Las Vegas, influence involved, fans love juice. They love the action. They love those moments. And they want to go to work on Monday saying, yes, when someone at the water cooler says, did you see the great catch in this game? Did you see the unbelievable finish in that game? Did you see the terrible coach's decision in that game? If you watch NFL Red Zone, I tell my staff, the answer for anyone who asks those questions has to be yes.
Scott, do you think the Red Zone channel would be as successful without fantasy football existing?
No, it would not be as successful. It would still be successful, I believe, but it would not be as successful. It comes at a time when the internet obviously blew up in the late 90s and obviously throughout the first decade of the 2000s. And that streamlined fantasy sports. I mean, I'm sure you go back far enough to the rotisserie leagues of handheld stats by the baseball geeks that used to do that. But when it became automated, when it became instantaneous, when live scoring became, and that obviously was all through the internet, there developed a stronger need for the immediate gratification of seeing what's going on in the NFL through the 10,000-foot view. And we've provided that. I still think it would be a success without the fantasy angle. It would not be as big a success as it is without that.
What time do you arrive at the studio on Sunday?
So we're on the Pacific time in Los Angeles. The studios are in Culver City, California, right in L.A. And I get in. I wake up about 5 a.m. I'm usually in a little after 6 a.m., I get into the studio and it's quite a feeling. I mean, not to over romanticize it, but I'm the only one. I'm almost always the first one to get into the studio, and I just kind of look around and it's, you know, like the scene in Hoosiers when they enter the championship gym and it's empty and they know it's going to be rocking and rolling in a few hours. And you just look around, calm before the storm, set up things. I'm a creature of habit. I set up my papers, my computer, my everything just the way I like it. I flip on the NFL Network pregame show, which is already on at that time, and kind of see what those guys are talking about. And then just go through the day, grab breakfast. We have production meeting, get makeup on, and rock and roll at 1 o'clock Eastern.
Are you measuring the ceiling to the floor? Like Pat?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, strap, grab the top of this here. Right. How far is the basket? Yeah. You know, it is funny because if you want to take that analogy a little bit farther, I'm basically just watching a wall of monitors. Now, not many people have a wall of monitors at home, but I'm sitting watching it. It's not like I'm Joe Buck sitting live in a game. I know people in your audience already realize this, but when I'm broadcasting it, to try and get that tension in my voice and mirror the drama of what we're seeing on the screen, I'm doing it from a very sterile environment. So it's a little bit particular, but I'm basically sitting in a glorified living room calling the games that people are actually watching in their actual living rooms.
Scott, what time do you leave the Culver City studio on a daily basis? On Sunday.
Yeah, so you know, it depends on if I want to decompress in the studio, you know, on the studio lot there, or if I just want to, you know, blow out of there and slump down on the couch. But I'm usually out of there sometime after 5 p.m., 5 p.m. Pacific, that right. is. So basically in at 6 a.m. Pacific and out at 5 p.m. or there somewhere around there Pacific.
How do you and your producers judge success each Sunday? What's the benchmark?
Great question. I won't speak for them, but we all talk about this as a group. I touched on it a little bit earlier. I want to make sure that there is no highlight that pops up on NFL Network at 11 o'clock at night on Sunday night, no highlight that pops up on SportsCenter at 11 o'clock or midnight or whenever on Sunday night that isn't some image, story, notable moment in an NFL game that people didn't see live. I think I just did the double negative there. I apologize for that. But I want to make sure that no one sees something afterwards that they didn't see as it happened on NFL Red Zone. And if we do that, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, you got to understand, this is one of the analogies that I like to use for music fans that are out there. Everyone has seen, you know, a DJ in a club and he's spinning records, CDs, whatever they use. He's at the turntables, right? So he can mix the music. Well, what we're trying to do is we're like DJs that are mixing music, but our music doesn't come from a catalog in a library that is just sitting in a briefcase that we brought into the club that day. We're mixing 8, 9, 10 different live concerts that are being held at 8, 9, 10 live venues around the country. So you can say, okay, Coldplay is playing this right now at MetLife Stadium. And, oh, Taylor Swift just broke into this at Dallas Cowboys Stadium. And over in Atlanta, this is going on. We're trying to mix those things as they happen and make it sound like something audible and pleasing to a musical audience. And obviously, we're doing that with live football games. It's a heck of an endeavor. So to have success, our broadcast is a little more rough than what most television fans are used to seeing. Most people don't understand what they're watching. They don't understand what really goes into broadcasting a football game or even a highlight show hours after the games have finished. What we're doing and doing it live and kind of manipulating space and time to show people things as they're happening or 5 seconds after they happened. Or we've shown touchdowns sometimes if we weren't on a play live, we've rewound that video and started the play that the touchdown occurs on when the guy is still dancing in the end zone in real time. We want it immediate because our audience wants it immediate. So again, really that's a long answer to your question, which is, you know, what is success? We want to have as clean a show as possible, but if there are stumbles, if there are, you know, we cut to a play and in the middle of a play, that's going to happen with the nature of what we're trying to do. What I want people to come away with is saying, wow, I just saw everything that was notable in the NFL for the last 7 hours.
Scott, how many people, generally speaking, work on the staff of Red Zone every Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, there are some that some employees are kind of shared within the building, so they might have a job for our show and another show on NFL Network that's coming up either at the same time or later. But generally speaking, 25 to 30 people is probably the number I would use.
And am I correct? You have a spotter and a researcher sitting in your studio basically next to you?
Exactly. So to try and paint the picture for your audience here as best I can, I'm in a studio, and our studio is very small. Most people think, oh, television studios, they're massive. And, of course, a lot of them are. And NFL Network owns a couple of very large Hollywood-type-sized studios. My studio, the Red Zone studio, is the size of maybe an oversized living room. It's not huge. It has a green screen where we can, you know, put the background behind me on the brief moments that you see me on camera. That is all a fake image in the background. It's just a superimposed image through green screen technology, with which I'm sure most of your audience is familiar. And then there are plasma screens mounted on the far wall of the studio. And after I'm done on camera at the beginning of the show, I walk over to those and I stand about 3 feet away from these plasma screens that are divided up into quadrants, divided up into 6 or 8 boxes to show however many games are going on simultaneously across the league. The studio is very quiet. I have my earpiece in. I can hear whatever single game the audience hears at home. I can watch all 8, 9, 10 games, whatever are going on simultaneously. But my microphone can be hot, can be live, can be on at any given moment. So everyone in the studio needs to be very quiet. I have a researcher and a spotter sitting immediately to my right. I mean, a lot of times I'll bang his shoulder, like when something big happens and you hear my voice kind of rise up there a little bit, I'll be banging his shoulder like, wow, did you just see that? Kind of an inside thing between us. The researcher and the spotter can give me names, jersey numbers, statistical updates, trends, things to look for, and their extra eyeballs in case I didn't see some individual play. I pride myself on pretty much trying to know everyone who touches a football in an NFL game, which is a tough task, especially mid-season and late season when injuries come into play. There are guys who weren't even on the roster at the beginning of the year that are catching touchdown passes, but those guys can help me, and they have computers with them to be able to punch something up immediately. Now, conversely, so the studio is quiet, and there's only about the only two other people in the studio, myself, the researcher, the spotter. We have a stage manager, Rhoda Gilmore. She used to be Larry King's stage manager when Larry King was doing his CNN show every single day. Yeah. She's a TV lifer and has a lot of stories in her, and she's the one who counts me down, you know, 3, 2, 1, start of the show, will get me water or whatever else, you know, facilitating what I need, and is just there kind of as the mother of the show, if you will, just kind of supporting everyone. And then we have robotic cameras in the studio. So we have one camera operator, and he sits over on the other far corner. So that's only 5 people that are in the studio. Now, conversely, the control room is managed chaos. That's where a majority of the people sit that are working on the show. I have 2 producers, and they alternate between the early window of games and the late window of games. Brian Nettles is the early window. Ryan Yunt is the late window. They both do a tremendous job. And they have 12, 15 different people yelling in their ears, hey, we just had a 20-yard play in this game. Hey, so-and-so just caught a 50-yard pass. Hey, I think that play is coming back on a penalty, so don't go to that game right now. Hey, this game is just about ready to come out of halftime, so get ready for the second half kickoff. Hey, you know what? Remember that we saw that the injury occurred and we thought it was nothing? Well, it turns out they're saying it's a ruptured Achilles for this guy, so we've got to report that. And they have to filter all of that through their brains to get in my ear, so there's only one voice in my ear saying, hey, here's how we're going to execute this next 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes of the show. It's an incredible thing. You got to come out sometime, Richard. You have an open invitation to come see you live if you want to.
That's nice, Scott. I'll let my bosses know that you're also willing to pay for the flight and the hotel. That's nice. That's out of your own personal pocket, not the NFL.
Yeah, well.
What's interesting to me in talking to a lot of people who are on air is, you know, they're creatures of habit, and they want their producers to speak to them in a certain manner, at a certain voice inflection. So the two men that you mentioned, you know, the one guy who has you early and the one guy who has you late, stylistically, how do you want them to approach you? Do you want them to be high energy and say, Scott, this is what happened? Or are they very, or do they got to keep you calm because there's chaos going on in their room?
That's a good question. No one has ever asked me that question before. I would say when you were asking that, the first thing that popped into my mind, and you won't be surprised by this, and maybe your audience won't either. We have a shorthand. We have a language that the average civilian would not understand at all. They could listen in on that, and they might be able to pick up certain things that are being said, but it's almost a coded language, because it has to be shorthand because of the immediacy of everything that we're doing. TV people could listen in on it, and they could say, oh, okay, I think I understand what they're saying, but we have just developed a language, various terms that we use. It would maybe be a little bit like eavesdropping into an NFL huddle and saying, yeah, okay, you recognized some English words in there, but you don't know what the play is going to look like when the team breaks the huddle. Maybe not that layered, because if, you know, we've all heard NFL films, you know, with a quarterback microphone, and you're like, what? You can't even make out anything that an NFL quarterback is telling his offensive teammates in the huddle. But we do. We have a shorthand. In terms of his enthusiasm or tone, I can work with anything. I'd rather not have him yelling and screaming too fast, because we all have to be what I call one-timers on NFL Red Zone. We do not have much time to repeat something. So if he says, ba-da-da-da-da, and the interception, and we're going to take that play, and then we're going to go back to Peyton Manning's drive, and I didn't hear what game he said off the beginning, I couldn't hear if he said Cleveland or Cincinnati or Detroit, then we have to go back and repeat it. And not to sound, you know, overly dramatic about it, but 5 seconds can cost you a lot when there are 8, 9, 10 games going on simultaneously. So we need to be clear in our communication. I don't mind if he's all fired up and enthusiastic. Brian, the guy who does the early set, he's a Pittsburgh Steelers fan and a passionate one at that. So I can always tell, like, when something happens, you know, okay, he wants to do this Antonio Brown 50-yard touchdown, and he's all fired up about that. And occasionally the mic will go dead, like the microphone that he's speaking into in the control room to my ear. And I look at my researcher and spotter, because they have headphones that are constantly available to the control room. And if it goes dead, I look at them and they just kind of nod at me like, yeah, it's total chaos in there. They're yelling at someone. Someone misidentified someone. Someone's getting scolded. Someone is saying, why don't you clarify this? And if they have a mini meltdown in the control room, they usually spare me that and cut the audio to my earpiece, for which I'm thankful, because I'm sure I sound like this on the podcast. I already sound like a madman to begin with. I don't need any encouragement to go down that path.
All right, let's take a break from the madman, Scott Hansen. We'll go to a commercial real quick and be back after this. All right, it's an amazing time of the year in sports, with college football, the NFL, hockey, and the NBA. And SeatGeek is the best way to find great deals on sports and concert tickets. And now when you use our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, in the SeatGeek app, you'll get a check for $20 back. Here's how it works. You download the SeatGeek app on your iPhone or Android. It's free and takes less than a minute to download. Then you search for your event, find a great deal, enter our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, and when you complete your purchase, SeatGeek will send you a $20 check to your house. It's that simple. It's that easy. SeatGeek is paying you to try it out. SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers online, shows you the best deals automatically. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket option available on one page. They have the feature called the Deal Score, ranks every ticket on the market with a value score, and plots the best deals on a color-coded map of the venue. Finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. On SeatGeek, you can store your credit card, and once you find a ticket you want to buy, you can make the purchase with just two quick taps of your phone. There's no faster way to buy tickets. So to redeem your promo code and get your $20 check, download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. If you want to go to the NFL, or if you want to see the NFL, college football, or the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app and enter our code MEDIA to save $20. All right, back with Scott Hansen of the Red Zone Channel and the NFL Network. Scott, on a general Sunday, how often do you appear on camera?
Wait, Richard, I'm confused. You just took a commercial break. What was that? Describe that to me. It was a commercial? Yeah, I'm not familiar.
That's little red zone humor. Wow, Scott, I totally went over. That's sad. My producer, Bet, is looking at me like, how did you not pick that up? In terms of commercial humor, Scott, that is first-rate stuff.
Well, thank you. I have limited material with which to work. It's usually bathroom breaks and commercials.
Well, I was going to make it a point to be one of the few people not to ask you about the former subject. I may not bring that up on this podcast.
Well, that is good discipline by you as an interviewer and a very courteous maneuver, but I guarantee you, I am shocked as to how many times I've answered the question in newspaper, radio, television interviews, a million times on Twitter, and yet people to this day come up to me and ask me that question and think that they're the first person that's asking the question.
Right.
So I try and be gracious as possible. If you feel like asking it, no problem. No, I'll give the answer to your audience.
I will not be answering the question. And the one parallel, though, is it's much like a race car driver. If you talk to NASCAR drivers, Indy drivers, they get asked that question all the time. But this question is, how often do you appear on camera? Because you are on camera on Sunday, but there are stretches where we do not see you, it seems like, for hours.
Yeah, you got that right. Sometimes I'm like, why do I even bother putting on makeup and wearing a necktie? Because that's a TV on air personality gripe. That's a prima donna gripe out of Scott Hansen right there. Now, look, the show is 7 hours long, and I think a few years ago, USA Today had someone on their staff sit and watch all 7 hours with a stopwatch. And their instructions were to log various aspects or components of how much was seen and what was seen on NFL Red Zone. For instance, they took a stopwatch, and every time the officials huddled on the field, and we stayed on that, you know, that's one of the most boring parts of an NFL game is when the officials are discussing something to try and get something right, and it might take them 45 seconds in a huddle. Well, no, we can't hear what's going on. It's completely boring. So they wanted to see how much of that time is spent, is seen by the Red Zone audience. Obviously, no commercials, so they could calculate how many commercial minutes were skipped. They calculated how many how much time a team was in the huddle calling their offensive play. How much time do we see of that? How much of any halftime show or whatever was seen? And then they also calculated how often Scott Hansen appeared on camera. And 7 hours. You want to take a guess as to how much apparently my face on that particular show was seen on camera? And I'm sure it's probably averages out week to week.
Tell us.
Less than 2 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Less than 120 seconds. There's about 20 some seconds off the top of the show, right at 1 o'clock Eastern when we come on. Maybe a little bit of an on-camera kiss, we call it, in between the 1 o'clock Eastern games and the 4 o'clock Eastern games. But if you have any high scoring games, those games last longer clockwise, or any overtime games in the 1 o'clock Eastern window, then that usually bleeds over into the 4 o'clock kickoffs, and we bridge straight through, and you don't need to see me on camera. There's always one on camera at the end that lasts anywhere from, 20 to 30 seconds. And then maybe in the late afternoon, there'll be a couple of different times when they pop me on camera if all of the games in the late afternoon session are at commercial break simultaneously. I don't mind it. One of the things I really try and do is check my ego at the door and not try and be like, I need to be on camera. But you do want to make that association with the audience. And for probably millions of people, it's my voice that they remember. I mean, I literally can tell you, I've been at a deli and was ordering sandwich meat, and someone started looking at me like, where have I heard that before? And then they ultimately, some of them come up to me and ask me, some of them will just stare, and they know there's something going on there. they spend, you know, hours of their Sunday with me, but they might not recognize me by face because of the limited camera time. But that's what the job requires. And hey, if you're not watching me, you're watching football, and I'm all for that.
One question on the commercials, and then I want to move on to another topic. But you know, when I announced that you were going to be on the podcast, I put it out on Twitter and asked if anybody had some questions. And this question came up from multiple people in different ways, but it's essentially the same question, and that is, the Red Zone is so really pushes the idea of no commercials, and you guys do an amazing job with that. But sometimes, just it happens that commercials come on, an ad breaks on the screen. I imagine for your producers, you know, it must kill them because, you know, you really want to run a clean show. But this is the reality is it's such an amazingly impressive production and hard to do that it's going to happen every now and then. So when it happens, how does the staff feel about it? Is everybody bummed out, or do you just like, hey, sometimes this is going to happen and we're going to get a commercial for like, you know, 6 seconds, 10 seconds, 8 seconds?
Yeah, well, everyone's definitely bummed out. There are words mentioned that won't be repeated here on the SI Media podcast, Richard. But
we're allowed to curse, quite frankly.
Okay, well, then I wish I had a recording of the director's track then when that happens, because it usually, you know, emanates from the control room. But, you know, if a snippet of a commercial gets on, I guarantee you it's less than 5 seconds. Usually it's about 1 second and their attention was on some other game for a moment, and it was, wow, there was an injury on the field, and the local broadcast, the Fox or CBS broadcast, took a quick timeout and just boom, went to commercial break. There wasn't the, what we call the bridge music, you know, how you hear the music crescendo right before the commercial's coming and the score pops up on the screen and it's a tell that a commercial is coming. Sometimes they'll literally just chop one in there. Those are the ones that occasionally get on. Here's what I say about that. We want to run a clean show. We don't ever want that to happen. But if it does, first of all the Twitter police blow up my timeline saying, oh, you said no commercials, and I saw 2 seconds of a Cialis ad. Oh, what are you doing? I want my money back. And they're just being, you know, they're just being antagonistic. They know. But other people will say this. When a snippet of a commercial gets on, they've been sitting and watching for 4 hours, 5 hours, into the sixth or seventh hour. And they say they almost forgot that commercials exist. And they, from what I can tell, they seem sincere about this. They almost enjoy it. Like, it's like getting over on the man here that anyone who's watching an individual game will be sitting through 2 more minutes of commercial break after the touchdown, and then they're going to kick the ball off, and then they're going to go to commercial break before the offense comes out and runs their play. And we, just by seeing a snippet of a commercial and then cutting away from it to more live football, are kind of like, yeah, all right, we're in this exclusive club here where we can circumvent that and not have to subject ourselves to it. So it's not great when it pops up, but I would hope the audience would just be understanding and tolerant of that if and when it does.
All right, Scott, I want to quickly shift to something I read about you that's pretty interesting, and I don't know how often this happens or how recent it happens, but you are very involved in doing missionary work, right, or going on missions. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do. I love – one of the greatest things about my job as host of NFL Red Zone and working as an employee of NFL Media is that football is really year-round these days when you put in the combine, the draft, free agency, you know, the schedule release show. There's always something going on in the world of football, but – In the deep summer, June, July, before training camps open up, there's usually a pretty good lull. And my bosses have been just amazingly understanding of, I love football with a passion. I love sports television. I've dedicated a huge part of my life to what I do, but it's not my life in general. I'm a Christian, and through my Christian faith, I love to try and serve and help others the way that I have been served and helped throughout my life as well. So what I try and do is, one of the ways it's manifested itself is I have the time and the income to be able to basically pick a place on the globe and go and partner up with an organization, usually an American organization that has some type of a ministry in a foreign country, and go and help people meet needs wherever they may be. And so I've gone to, I've been to 6 of the 7 continents, multiple countries. It's one trip each year, usually go for a week or two and just go and serve. And I love seeing different cultures. I love seeing the world. And there's also something fun about going to a different place where nobody knows you. Nobody knows you're a TV guy or whatever else like that. Sometimes if I'm with children and I'm talking or teaching or doing whatever, they might say, hey, you know, you should be on TV or you should be on radio, you know, because your voice sounds a certain way. And I'm like, well, it's funny you mentioned that. But yeah, it's a thrill. It's an absolute thrill and a blessing to be able to go and do those type of things. The most recent one, if you're interested in knowing, was down to Haiti. I went down to Port-au-Prince and I served. There was a sports tie-in to that one. Guy by the name of David Nelson. Some of your audience might know him. Maybe you do. He's an NFL wide receiver, played with a handful of different teams. Back in college, won the national championship with the Florida Gators, caught the game-winning touchdown pass in the one championship game from Tim Tebow. And David and his brother have an orphanage down in Haiti. And David and I got to know each other actually through Tim Tebow, who's a friend of mine and obviously a former teammate and a close friend of David's. And so David was always like, hey, Scott, I know you take trips and stuff. You got to come down, be with me and my brother, see our operation down here. So this last summer I went down, spent a week with them, and it was awesome. It was awesome. It's humbling. It's a lot of it can be there's a lot of sadness, a lot of darkness, abject poverty, and yet there are still rays of hope. And I'm not sounding Pollyanna-ish. I'm really telling you the way that it is through my experience. And to be even a little momentary part of something good in places where there's a lot of bad is something that I love to do, and I'm humbled by it.
Scott, is there a place that you've always wanted to go to on a mission that you have yet to go? So just a place that we will see you at in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I said 6 of the 7 continents. The only one I haven't been to is Antarctica, but there's really not much to do there that I could figure out other than write your name in the snow, I suppose. So that might have to just be a tourism trip. I've been to a couple different places in Africa, and there are still other countries in Africa that I've looked at that I'd be like, man, could I go there? I don't want to be foolish in my choices. There are hot spots in the country that are hostile towards people coming in, and I don't mind a little bit of risk or even danger, but I don't want to be foolish in doing it. You know, there are places where war is breaking out or has already broken out, and there are so many people. You look at what's going on in Syria. You look at what's going on in terribly impoverished countries that have some type of a natural disaster where relief just doesn't come to them or it comes to them too slow. Those are the type of places that I might look at going. To give you a country, though, here's one. I've never been to the Holy Land. I'd love to go to Jerusalem. There's so much history there. So many of the world religions have stakes there, if you will. And there are needs there as well. I mean, Jerusalem's a very established area outside of the political and religious strife that is there. But I'd love to go to that place, go to Israel, go to the surrounding countries and see some of the ancient history of stuff that I read about in scripture and witness it myself and kind of get a further understanding of it firsthand myself and then go and serve people at the same time.
All right, a couple more here with Scott Hansen, and we'll ask some questions that the people who watch him and follow me, and obviously if you're a fantasy football fan or a fan of the NFL, you probably at least at some point watch the Red Zone channel. Scott, what is your sort of thought process in terms of offering opinion during a Red Zone broadcast, whether that's on coaching decisions, player actions, player inactions, et cetera?
That is an excellent question, and one that, well, I'll tell you right now, Richard, that one is left to my discretion. No one has ever come to me and said, Scott, you need to be a pure broadcaster. I mean, look, I went to Syracuse University. By the time I was mid-high school, I pretty much knew I wasn't going to be an NFL football player, so I wanted to try and become a sports broadcaster. And as I'm sure you know, you well know, and a lot of your audience knows, Syracuse is considered the incubator for future sportscasters. It's a tremendous broadcasting school. So I went there, studied hard. I have a, you know, broadcast journalism degree with a capital J, as we used to say. I mean, playing it by the book. And that traditionally means broadcasters, play-by-play men, hosts are not supposed to interject their own opinion in their work. And that should hold true. It doesn't much anymore in today's media landscape, but it should hold true for news broadcasting and other different forms of broadcasting. On Red Zone, because I'm the lone voice outside of the Fox and CBS analysts that are at the game, that are calling the game, that we listen into very frequently, I do sometimes interject opinion. What I hope I'm bringing to light, though, is an opinion that is informed by what I see thousands, if not millions, of fans holding an opinion or a thought that can advance someone's either entertainment value or information of a broadcast. Let me maybe give you a for instance. Tom Brady came within a legal whisker of being shut down for the first month of the season. He gets the legal reprieve, the week before the season begins. He has come out and torched the league, and no one can question, or you can question, but you'd have to be pretty foolish at this point to think that he was playing with tampered footballs right now, even if you believe that he was cheating last year and in seasons prior. Therefore, to espouse an opinion about, you know, is Tom Brady playing with a chip on his shoulder, or Tom Brady seems to be playing with a chip on his shoulder, throwing out an opinion there, that's an opinion that is something that is widely held or at least considered. It's maybe something that I would want our audience to consider or to share in the discussion of something along those lines. And there are probably several moments throughout each Red Zone broadcast where I'll throw something out, or maybe some analysis, not even an opinion of mine, but some analysis of what I see happening that maybe the Fox or CBS broadcasters didn't bring out, or it's a big picture analysis of, wow, we have five different games, four of them look like they're going to go to overtime right now, and say something along an opinionated line as opposed to a pure broadcaster line. I hope people, I trust our audience to be smart enough to know the difference between fact and opinion. And of course, I can absolutely be opinionated. I can be incorrect. Factually, I can be incorrect. Social media is a great adjuster of when I say a guy has made 98% of his field goals and he's actually made 97.1% of his field goals. I'll hear about it. I want to be 100% accurate, and I do not mind being corrected or rebuked when I'm not.
Scott, this is from, again, another person who wrote in. Do you see the games as a fan while you're doing the Red Zone gig, or do you try to watch it with a truly neutral mindset? Like, I wouldn't know who you are a fan of. Maybe I should. But so do you watch it as with a kind of an objectivity or like a journalistic mindset, or are you a fan of a team and we might see some of that fandom seep in when your team's doing well?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I appreciate whoever set that into you. I would say this, and it's gonna sound like a cop-out, but let me explain. I would say both. I really believe I watch objectively, but I watch as a fan. I love the NFL, and I defy anyone in broadcasting to find a guy who wants to show more football in a more informative and entertaining way than I do. I burn to do it. I absolutely love when we have a great show and I feel that the audience is served. Now, I can do that objectively because I do not have a favorite NFL football team. Most people can't believe that. They're like, well, you've worked in the NFL, you da 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 da. I grew up in Michigan, grew up in the suburbs of Detroit. Family was season ticket holders to the Detroit Lions for many years. So the Lions were my team growing up. But after I haven't lived in Michigan in a couple of decades, and you get to know guys in the NFL working so closely with the NFL, I haven't, they diminished as my favorite team. I mean, there are players and coaches on the staff of the Lions that I like, but I can say that about any one of the 32. What I root for is drama. I want the great moments. I want those things. Look, it's football. We're not doing something that changes the earth so to speak. We're doing something that hopefully adds to fans' lives. I like to envision families sitting down and watching the show together and talking about this great sport of football and seeing these fantastic moments. This is it's a diversion. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's a way people spend maybe the one day of the work week that they get off. If they're sitting there on their one time off and going to spend a handful of hours with me, I want to serve them so well. So I'm hoping that we have 9 games going across the National Football League. 8 of them are one possession games. 4 Super Bowl winning quarterbacks are down a touchdown and need to go the length of the field in 1:10 with no timeouts left. Let's watch and see what happens. I love those moments. So that brings out the fan in me. You can probably even hear it right now. I'm getting a little worked up just thinking about this Sunday upcoming. But you know it's going to happen somewhere, and we get to bring people to that. It's like the guy who gets to buckle up people at the roller coaster ride. You know, you're sitting there, and this guy came from Japan to come to Disney World, and you're buckling him up to go to Magic Mountain for the first time, and you see the excitement in his and his little boy's eyes that they're finally here after all this time, and they don't know exactly what it's going to be like, but they've envisioned it, and they know it's going to be fun, and you get to be there at the moment that they depart. That's the way I look at what I do. That's the fan in me, okay, because I love the NFL. The objectivity is I don't care. I do not care if Tom Brady wins another game this year. I do not care if Peyton Manning runs the table and goes undefeated. There will be dramatic moments if either one of those happens, and I'll love watching it and demonstrating it to the audience, but I don't have a personal stake in it. That being said, there's a long answer. I apologize for this.
It's a podcast. No apologizing. We need long answers.
digital space is cheap, right?
Exactly.
I have a fantasy football team. So if you ask me who my favorite NFL team is, I'm competitive. I get after it. I play with a lot of on-air personalities in a fantasy football league at NFL Media. And I want to beat them, okay? Just like you want to beat your next-door neighbor, your brother, your friend, your colleague, whoever it is when you play fantasy football. And so if – I'll just throw one out. Odell Beckham is one of my guys this year. If Odell Beckham has a 60-yard touchdown catch and weaves through the defense and goes, and I'm calling that highlight, there might be a little extra spunk in the way I call it and because I'm happy about it. But I'm not going to allow that to impede. If Odell Beckham fumbles on the next play and loses me 2 fantasy points, I'm going to call that with enthusiasm too, because guess what? Some defense just made him fumble, and somebody in my audience is fired up about the way that defense performed. So that's the long answer as to how I really feel I can be a fan and I can be objective at the same time.
All right, a couple more here with Scott Hansen. Scott, one of the things that probably the audience does not know is that you were a walk-on at Syracuse University, a walk-on defensive back and wide receiver, long snapper. You, during practice, lined up against Marvin Harrison, Quadre Ismail. So, you know, there were some NFL talent on that team.
That's right.
And there's a story I remember. I don't know if I read it in Rember Brown's Grantland piece or somewhere else, but you were close to playing, and you were close to getting on the field a la Rudy, but it didn't happen, right? So you went through your Syracuse career as a scout team player, but you never did suit up. Are you all these years later, does that bother you, or are you just sort of, that was just meant to be and you loved your time there as being part of that team?
Well, yeah, you're 100% right. I always tell people I was Rudy without the sack at the end, without the glorified moment there at the end. I mean, I used to pop a few Tylenol before practice because I knew I was going to go through the meat grinder. When you're a walk-on, you're obviously the lowest man on the totem pole, and you run on the scout team wherever they tell you to. You're cannon fodder, baby. If the offensive line coach wants to run offensive guard trap drills for 10 straight minutes, and they don't want to use one of their scholarship guys to be the guy who's getting trapped, Hansen, get over here. I used to go through. I would go through a drill where I would be trapped by 300-pound linemen every 30 seconds or so and line back up as the defensive tackle weighing 205 as I did at the time. But I loved it. It got me inside of the internal workings of a team. I loved my team at the time. I still do. I love my alma mater. I did not have the glorified sack. The moment that you're talking about, I think that you read about, was we were beating Rutgers. Syracuse was beating Rutgers 56-0 or something like that. It was a shutout. And we were beating them so bad that my guys on the sideline, all the starters were out of the game. The second team was in there. The third string was starting to weave in there. They started chanting Hansen on the sideline. Let's get Hansen in the game. Because that would have, I guess to them, that would have been the ultimate coup de grace if they could prove that, hey, we could put our walk-ons in against you. But our coach at the time, Paul Pasqualoni, I played 2 years under Dick McPherson. Old-time football fans will remember that name as the great coach of Syracuse University, and then he went on to coach the New England Patriots for a couple of years. Played 2 years under him, and then Paul Pasqualoni, longtime Syracuse coach, took over. Well, Paul was a walk-on himself. He was a walk-on at Penn State under Joe Paterno. And the rumor had it was that Pasqualoni looked at his walk-ons like we had it easy. You know how old timers always say, oh, you guys, you kids these days with your iPods and everything else, you didn't know. We used to have to hum going to school and stuff. And so I think it was kind of overlooked at that moment. Like, no, you know, he's not getting in the game. We got a shutout going. I don't want to put him in at safety and let a touchdown go over his head or something, which I would have broken it up, Richard, by the way. I would have done my job, but, I never got in the game. Does it bother me? No. And here's why. In life, you got to earn what you get. And I know my skills. I know my strengths. I know my weaknesses. I was never good enough to demonstrate to the coaches in practice that to win the game, they needed to put Hansen in the game. That's what I wanted to get to. I didn't want to get one little 56-0 snap at the end of the game to say, hey, Mom, look it, I was on the field. I mean, that would have been fun. But what I wanted to do was to earn my way where the coaches would say, you know what? We got to do this job. We got to win this game. Hansen's the best guy for this particular job. I never was able to work my way into that level on the Syracuse football team. And that's on me. And I worked with the physical gifts that I have as best I could. But I can live with that. I can live with that. And you know what? I always joke with my former teammates, Marvin Harrison, Kadri Ismail, Chris Gedney went on to the NFL, and then guys that didn't go to the NFL. Hey, guys, I made it to the NFL after all these years, and I'm going to be here a lot longer than guys who played in the NFL because no one's trying to take out my knees every single Sunday. And the new young guy's not coming in to take my roster spot. I can live with that.
I would assume Marvin and Kadri were rather tough handles. My guess would be.
Well, here's the deal. So I used to go 100%. You got to understand that not everyone goes 100% in practice at times. You know, guys get tired. They're humans and whatnot. So guys used to hate going up against me. The coaches loved putting me in because I had to go 100%. If I was a sloppy 4.9, 5 flat, 40-yard dash guy, I had to be going 100%. If Kadri Ismail, who runs a 4.3, is going 75%, I might be able to hang with him. But they knew, you're going to try and block me? I'm going to try and scratch your eyes out to get out of that block. You want me to block someone, coach? I'm going to go after him with everything I got. Whereas other guys might be going half speed. So the coaches used to love putting me in there. And then if somebody busted me in the chops because they got mad and they wanted to fight me for going what they said was too hard in practice, the coaches didn't mind that. If Hansen gets injured, whatever, tape him up and we'll throw him back out there again.
Scott, last one from us. And again, the guest has been Scott Hansen of the NFL Network and, of course, the Red Zone Channel. And actually, Scott, I should mention, you're doing boxing for Spike, right? So you've done some stuff away from the NFL.
Yeah, it's a new gig that I've picked up just this year. Early 2015, we signed a deal with Spike where I am the play-by-play man, or blow-by-blow, some people like to call it, for PBC on Spike, Premier Boxing Champions, the new boxing series that debuted in 2015 across multiple broadcasting platforms. And I've loved doing it. I was a boxing fan before, but I never had any internal knowledge of the boxing, the fight game, as they call it, prior to doing this. But I've loved doing it. I've loved doing it. I do it once a month. It's on Friday nights, once a month on Spike. And if you're a football fan and you don't mind the madman from Red Zone calling a different sport, I hope people check it out sometime.
All right, and then finally, Scott, I mean, do you have a sort of a game plan or a thought process on how long you want to do Red Zone for? You know, some people who get certain jobs, they want it for 20, 25 years. They, you know, if you ask Joe Buck, I'm sure Joe Buck wants to be a play-by-play person until, whatever age he wants to retire at, in his 60s. Red Zone Channel is obviously a little bit different from lifestyle to the energy that you need, everything else. How do you approach how long you want to be working in that environment?
Yeah, that's a good question. First off, I love the job. I love the requirements. The demands are extreme. I joke with people. I feel like, you know, I'm Wolf Blitzer on election night once a week. And Wolf has a whole panel of experts and stuff, and they do commercials and everything like that. But it is exhausting. When I'm done at the end of the day, I mean, I am tapped out. I take my earpiece out. I have my earpiece in my left ear for Red Zone. And the reason I tell you that is any other broadcast that I do, I try and put the earpiece in the right ear. Why? Because I really do believe that I will lose hearing in my left ear from the accumulation of the constant noise and the constant stimulus for 7 straight hours that a television earpiece gives me. And in my left ear is where it needs to be for the Red Zone show. So I want to try and balance it out. My eyes get so dry. I sleep with little eye drops right on my nightstand because I'll wake up in the middle of the night after a show from staring at televisions from just a couple feet away for 7 hours. They'll get so dry. There are physical demands to the show, not to try and sound like I'm some kind of a hero, but that is rare in television, those type of physical requirements. How long do I want to do it? I hope to stay sharp at it. I hope it's a big show for a long time. And as long as the audience wants to consume it, and as long as the NFL wants to put on that type of product, I hope I'm the host, and I hope to, it could be the last stop in my career if everything works out right. If not, I'll find something else, and I'll put every bit as much energy and passion into whatever I find my hands to do. But for right now, NFL Red Zone, if your living room is the best seat in the house, as the cliche goes, I got the best seat in the galaxy. Because I'm piloting the ship, and I love doing it.
All right, Scott Hansen has been the guest. You can tell from his passion that he loves to do the Red Zone channel work for the NFL Network. He's become incredibly popular in that space with NFL fans, fantasy football fans, no doubt people who are gambling on the game, and just people who love the offense of the NFL, which is just incredibly fun to watch. If you, in particular, if you don't really have a, if you're not a hardcore fan of one team. The Red Zone channel is, in my opinion, far and away the best channel to watch. If you, understandably, if you're a fan of one team, you probably want to watch that broadcast until that game gets out of reach. All right, Scott, continued success in your endeavors at the NFL Network and at Spike, and I certainly admire what you're doing with your missionaries of charity. And for God's sake, get some rest, Scott, occasionally. You know?
I'm going to go take a nap right after we're done here. Hey, Richard, thanks for the time. Great being with you. And, you know, I follow you on Twitter, so keep all of us appraised in terms of what's going on in the business.
I'll do my best. Scott Hansen, thank you very much. Appreciate it. When fantasy football emerged in the late 90s, it changed the game for sports fans. The latest evolution of fantasy sports is a daily version where you don't have to wait for the end of the season to win a cash prize. If you've ever wanted to try it out, use my code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They will pay out over $75 million a week this football season. Entry fees start at just $1, so there's a league for everyone. Over 1 million players have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Now it's your turn. If you're watching the games anyway, try out FanDuel. It turns your NFL Sunday into a whole new experience. So go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, and sign up now. Here's a special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets you earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. The offer is only good for the first 50 people that use the code MEDIA today, so don't get left out. So if you've been in a bar or at a game or your kid's principal's office, who is writing this copy? You've probably heard about daily fantasy sports. Want to try daily fantasy baseball, basketball, or hockey? FanDuel has all the top sports covered. Find out why daily fantasy sports have gotten so popular and do it on FanDuel.com with our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Try it out today. For basketball lovers, the SI Network has you covered. Chris Mannix has just started a new SI NBA podcast called Open Floor. He will be talking to players, coaches, general managers, and discussing all the activities that happen in the NBA. It's a new podcast. Please check it out. That's Open Floor with Chris Mannix. Search for that one on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you want to have any of our, or if you want to listen to any of our SI podcasts, please visit si.com/podcasts. All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Scott Hansen, and I bring Bette Marston in here. He's got just an interesting job. I mean, that's, you know, everybody, quote unquote, has a unique job in the sports media, but he really does, given what he does on Sunday. It's, you know, it's sort of just this fascinating juggling act, and they really perform it, like, amazingly. It must be crazy to watch it live, but it really does come off pretty seamless when you watch it on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I watch NFL Red Zone. I've watched it every Sunday for the last 2 seasons, I believe, all 7 hours of it. And it's pretty impressive exactly what they do. And, I've always wondered, how their whole production is, if Scott Hansen is actually watching all these games, and it seems like he is.
Yeah,
he said he has all the screens right there in front
exactly.
of him, which I think is really impressive.
And
you even heard it, like, when he was talking to us today. He sounds so intense. The way he was talking
right.
to us today is how he sounds on TV.
Holy cow,
you have to have a personality like that for the job.
Yeah, it's like a Red Bull kind of who are not a sponsor, by the way. It's
mm-hmm.
kind of that's the kind of
caffeine fueled,
yeah.
Very energetic. He said it. He loves the action. He loves it when it, you got a minute 10 to go and you've got 90 yards to get on the field to get the winning touchdown. Like that's what he lives for, and that makes him the perfect person for this job, I think.
Yeah,
and I also found it interesting how he admitted that that Red Zone would probably not be as successful without fantasy football. People watch highlights and want to watch those scoring plays so they know for their fantasy team. So.
Yeah, I think I'm glad he said yes. I think he had to say yes because I think that's, the fact is with Daily Fantasy in particular, that channel's only going to get bigger.
Yeah.
That's the channel I think that has a pretty good, certainly has a great standing now, but it would only get bigger as sort of Daily Fantasy even gets bigger and that fantasy element. And certainly, if it's a way to watch out of market games
mm-hmm.
without,
Yeah, absolutely. He's also very audience minded. He kept talking about how, I want to think about how the audience wants to hear this or, what the audience wants to see. So I think that's also a good reason why he's good at his job.
Yeah, yeah. It's good to see people who are really into their job, and he is definitely one. So our thanks to Scott Hansen. My thanks to our previous couple of guests, including Jim Miller, who spoke about Grantland. Actually, as we're taping this, word just came down that ESPN has suspended Grantland. That's incredibly crappy news. I guess I'm not that surprised. I guess I am a little surprised. I mean, on the podcast, I wasn't sure that this would happen at least until late in 2016 at the earliest. So that's a bummer. I mean, some brilliant writing out of there and some great staffers, including people who used to work here. So that literally came down as we're taping this now. So, if Bette and I are sort of were thinking about some of our previous colleagues elsewhere as we're taping this, that's the reason. All right. So thank you very much for the support of the podcast. The Jalen Rose and Jim Miller numbers were incredible. The Jim Miller podcast hit number 2 on Sports and Pod behind Bill Simmons, which is, kind of ridiculous to think about for this small podcast. So thank you very much for the support. We are on Stitcher. We are on SoundCloud. We are on iTunes. And everybody at SI is at si.com/podcast. Our thanks to Slate, Panoply, and executive producer Dan Bloom. For my producer, Bette Marston, for the guest, Scott Hansen, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.